Thank you, everybody. We're going to call this Thursday, September 24th, 2015 meeting of the Northern Virginia Transportation Authority to order. Ms. Spear, would you please take the roll?
Chairman Noe.
Here.
Mayor Yule. Chairman Bulova.
Here.
Chairman York.
Here.
Chair Hines. Mayor Parrish.
Here.
Mayor Silverthorne.
Here.
Councilmember Snyder.
Here.
Councilmember Rochelle.
Here.
Senator Evan.
Here.
Delegate Rusk.
Here.
Delegate Minshew. Mr. Garzinski. Ms. Bushu.
Here.
Mayor Frazier. Ms. Cuervo.
Here.
Mr. Horsley.
Here.
Excellent, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, we have
excellent. We're going to take the agenda a little out of order. If Mr. Shrikanth will be gives a little patience. We have some members that may have to leave before the end of the evening. So I'm going to go skip over the presentations and go to the consent agenda. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Let's take the first 8 items on that as a block. Then we have 2 that actually I want to pull off here. I want to pull off number 9.
Mr. Chairman,
if
appropriate stop for a motion, I would move our consent agendas, item 1 through 8.
Is there a second? I guess it's 6 through 13, actually.
6 through 13.
Okay. That's
all confusing.
Yeah. Roman numerals. Motion for Mrs. Bulova, second by Mr. York. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
And Mr. Chairman, I'm hoping that Ms. Spear will make the record show that Delegate Minshew came in before the first action.
I appreciate it, Ms. Mayor.
And I just realized I messed it up because I still did it out of order. We're going to jump backwards now to the minutes of the July 23rd meeting. Is there any comments, changes? Is there a motion? Moved by Mrs. Bulova. Second by Mr. Evan. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Excellent. Now we'll go back. Item 14A is the appointment of a legislative committee. I've asked Mrs. Bashu to be the chairman of that. And I heard from Mr. Silverthorne and Mrs. Rischel and someone else, Mr. Snyder, to be on the legislative committee. Is there a motion in order for that?
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Second, Mr. Russ. Second, Mrs. Bulova. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? And finally, I guess I didn't have to pull this one. What I did have to pull was amendment to the to the 2015 calendar. This is we are canceling outright the October meeting. We'll move the agenda items to the November meeting.
Right.
Okay. And we can do that.
Yes.
Is that going to mess you up?
Not at all.
Any motion?
Please.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Mr. Parrish. Second by Mrs. Bulova. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, excellent. Do we have to take action on the CMAQ RSDP transfer?
You do.
Okay. Is there a motion? I'm sorry, I took it out of order. I messed myself up. But we have a motion on the approval of the CMAQ RSDP transfer from Alexandria. And Prince Floyd.
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Russ, second by Mr. Parrish. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. We have 2 action items that call for presentation. Mrs. Backman, the FY17 call for projects.
Mr. Chairman, at your December 2014 meeting, the authority agreed to have a call for projects for a 1-year program, which would be for FY17, and to advance that program, if you will, after we did a test analysis of the transit projects through the HB 599 process. VDOT and the Department of Rail and Public Transportation have worked with the consultant to do that test analysis. The project implementation working group did meet on September 16th and recommended that the authority issue the call this evening. And I would like to ask Keith Jasper to come and speak in a little more detail.
Good evening. As Monica said, the HB 599 evaluation of transit projects was required really by the PIWG as a test to ensure that the modeling approach would be able to provide consistent and reasonable results for transit projects prior to advancing with the call for projects for the FY17 program. And I believe on the whole, that is the position that we have now reached, in that there is general agreement that the model performed reasonably and will enable consistent comparison of highway and transit projects. The PIWG also has started the process of reviewing the project selection process for the FY17 programme. At this stage, we envision it will be broadly consistent with the same process that was used for 15-16, but with enhancements to support decision-making by the authority in due course. One particular enhancement we are proposing is the methodology for calculating congestion relief relative to cost. We've started this discussion with the PIWG. We need to continue discussion at the next PIWG meeting. We've also raised it with the Technical Advisory Committee. If possible, we'd like to also raise this with the JAC as well to get as much input as possible to make sure everyone is on board with the methodology and has the opportunity to provide comments and suggestions to make sure it's as robust as possible. And very importantly, the PIWG is considering possible changes to the relative weightings associated with each of the 11 selection criteria that are used to calculate MBTA's quantitative score. You recall one of those 11 criteria is based on the HB 599 rating, and that's the one which attracts the largest weight of 35%, was used for the FY15-16 programme. And PIWG is considering the possibility of changing that, most likely raising it to what is yet to be determined and what needs to be adjusted to accommodate such changes, is something which the PIWG has asked MBTA staff to evaluate and come back to the next meeting on October 7th with some results of that kind of sensitivity analysis. So that is ongoing. Attached to the memorandum is a copy of the project application form that we propose to use in association with the call for projects. It's generally consistent with what's been used before, but updated to reflect the overall approach to project selection, so that all the jurisdictions and agencies can see exactly what it is we want. From the staff point of view, it streamlines the evaluation process, and also it enables the jurisdictions and agencies to start collating the information that's required even while the PIWG is finalising some of the finer details of the project selection process. Those details do not cause any delay in the call for projects. The information is the same regardless of the project selection process, weightings and so on. So we are proposing a schedule which would require the corporate projects to be submitted to us by the end of November. And on that basis, we would look to come back to the authority at your meeting in December to seek approval for the list of projects to be formally submitted to VDOT and DRPT for HB 599 evaluation. And we would do the evaluation of the projects to calculate the rest of the MBTA score internally ourselves in parallel with VDOT and DRPT. And ultimately, if everything stays the course, we'll be looking for the authority to adopt the FY17 programme in July of next year. Essentially, that's where we are.
Mr. Chairman, I would be glad to move approval to issue the call for projects for the fiscal year 2017 program, and this allows the jurisdictions the opportunity to begin assembling information while the selection committee finalizes its recommendations, and then the submissions would be due November the 30th. So it's a motion to approve the call for projects.
Motion by Mrs. Sabola, second by Mr. York. Any discussion? questions. I will share, there is a blue sheeted item attached to the resolution in your packet. We received an email from Mrs. Hines, who couldn't be here tonight, on behalf of Arlington County, expressing some concerns with the transit testing modeling. And I'll put words in your mouth, Mr. Horsley, but I think DRPT has similar concerns, but the feedback was they don't rise to the level that means we should delay the call for projects.
That's
is that
right.
Correct? Okay. Just make people aware of that. You can review that at your leisure. That said, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Excellent. Thank you very much. And the last action item is actually a personnel committee, and Mr. Parrish, we're delaying that.
We are. Mr. Chairman, I would like to let the authority know that the committee still needs to do some additional work, and everything is going well, but we need to do some additional work, and we were hoping that we could pick that up at the next meeting.
Okay. Excellent. And that said, we'll go back in time to our presentations. Mr. Shrikant, where are you? Good to see you again, sir. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Tell us about greenhouse gas, please.
No, I'm
trying. I tell you, the Pope talked about it this morning.
He
got really big shoes to fill.
Yeah. Better to be upset. Thank you. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you for the invitation and the opportunity to share some of the work that the Council of Governments and the Transportation Planning Board and the Metropolitan Washington Air Quality Committee has been doing. I'm very mindful of the time and the items you have on the agenda. I will try to be brief. I know it's hard for me to do that, but I will try my best.
Couple of us up here the same way.
Okay. I'm going to start out the presentation by trying to provide the policy context in which this study is being undertaken. And then I will hand it over to my senior colleague, Bob Griffiths, to present the technical analysis that has been done. And then towards the end, I'll be happy to take any questions and clarifications. To provide a background as to how we got to where we are here today, you will recall many of the jurisdictions around the table are members of the Council of Governments. In 2008, the Council of Governments established a climate change committee. The committee worked on the topic and produced the climate change report. And the climate change report outlined broad aspirational goals for the region, which was to reduce the amount of greenhouse gases in the region by certain amounts. And so it made those recommendations. And in 2009, the Council of Governments established the Climate, Energy, Environment Policy Committee, which then recommended that the Council of Governments as an entity adopt the targets as regional goals. And that was done in 2009. And in 2010, the Council of Governments once again worked on Region Forward, which was a socioeconomic environmental consideration of how this region as a whole could move forward. And these greenhouse gas reduction goals became part of the regional Region Forward's compact. Many of the individual jurisdictions in the region then proceeded to adopt these goals as their own goals. So that had happened in 2010, and in 2010, the Transportation Planning Board did a technical analysis to find out, okay, now that the region has these goals, what kinds of actions would be needed within the transportation sector to provide its contribution towards attaining the regional greenhouse gas reduction goals. It was called the What Would It Take study. It identified certain things that we could do at the local, regional, and state level, which would have some contributory effect, but significant reductions would need larger systemic, perhaps at the federal level, addressing either the vehicle technology or the vehicle fuel. In 2014, the Council of Governments was asked, the Transportation Planning Board and the Metropolitan Washington Air Quality Committee was asked to reaffirm these aspirational goals that the region had adopted back in 2010. And both policy bodies in 2014, around December timeframe, passed resolution reaffirming those goals. And around the same time, MWAC and the Climate, Energy, Environment Policy Committee requested COG to convene a group of multi-sector working group made up of senior professionals from each of your jurisdictions agencies to look at what actions could the region take that would be considered viable and implementable at the state, local, and regional level to actually realize greenhouse gas reductions and to move the region forward towards those goals. So that was how in 2015 the multi-sector working group was established. This was the charge given to the multi-sector working group. There were four specific items. The first one was this group of professional staff from each of the jurisdictions in the region, covering energy sector, your built environment sector, land use, and transportation, all four sectors. They would identify what would be considered viable, implementable actions that could be taken at local, state, and regional level to help reduce greenhouse gases. And then once these strategies were identified, we would analyze them to quantify the benefits, which would be greenhouse gas reductions, and a cost, and an approximate time frame for implementing those. On the basis of these two, the individual policy boards, which would mean the Transportation Planning Board for transportation sector, Metropolitan Washington Air Quality Committee for the environment and built energy sectors, would then explore establishing specific targets within these four sectors. So the region has a target, but individual sectors do not have targets. So that exploration would take place on the basis of the technical work that would have been done. And finally, there would be an action plan developed for the region within each of those sectors. What kind of actions would this region have to take to realize those greenhouse gas reductions at the local, state, and regional level? That was the general charge that was given to us. And the multi-sector working group was established under the auspices of the Council of Governments Board of Directors, under the Transportation Planning Board, and under the Metropolitan Washington Air Quality Committee. All of those three are independent policy bodies. All three bodies contributed funding and staff to conduct the work, which we started around January timeframe. And there has been about 80-plus senior technical staff from your jurisdictions participating in the multi-sector working group. And we have also hired a consultant to help us with our technical work. And the staff within the Council of Governments are also assisting the multi-sector working group. The process that the group has used today is we had 3 months or three sessions of what I would call brainstorming sessions, where the technical staff was asked to identify what kind of strategies could be pursued in each of the jurisdictions in the transportation sector, land use sector, energy generation sector, and the built environment sector. What kind of strategies could be pursued that would help reduce greenhouse gases? We tried to assess which of these strategies would be considered viable and which would be really pushing the envelope, meaning which are stretched strategies. And we developed those over a 3-month period. We distributed the compiled list for public comments. We sought public input. We added some, made some changes. And then we worked with the multi-sector working group and the consultant to pare it down to a limited set of strategies that we would analyze. We analyzed them for three specific time periods, 2020, 2040, and 2050. And the results are now available. We have shared it with the multi-sector working group, and here we are today. We presented the results to the Transportation Planning Board earlier this month, and we are here today presenting it to you. And the Metropolitan Washington Air Quality Committee will be briefed next week, and the other policy boards next month. I wanted to note that this is, sorry for the small size of the font, but the intent here of this slide was to indicate the range of strategies within land use and transportation that was proposed by the technical staff. So these were the strategies that we took to the public, got public input, and then further analyzed and grouped them and selected a subset of these to be analyzed. The selection from the larger list to a smaller list that was actually analyzed used a qualitative rating methodology. It looked at factors such as, are these new or existing? Meaning, are these building up on existing strategies or are these new strategies? Are all these rules going to be applicable for new buildings or for existing buildings? What is the potential for reducing CO2? Low, medium, high? These are all qualitative, trying to get a sense of how much effort to put into analyzing these so that we know how much payoff we would get from those. We also try to identify, in addition to reducing greenhouse gases, are there any other co-benefits that these strategies would bring? For example, if the region and the country is pursuing an energy policy, will implementing some of these strategies, in addition to reducing greenhouse gases, will it also help advance our energy policy goals? So with that, this is just a recap of what the regional greenhouse gas reduction goals are. The baseline was 2005. The inventory indicates that about 75 million metric tons of CO2 equivalent gas was in our atmosphere. The goals were that by 2012, we would reduce the emissions by about 10% to business as usual levels, which means we would come back in 2012 to the same levels of emissions we had in 2005. This is while also accommodating growth in the region. And the inventory for 2012 indicates that the region attained this goal. That is certainly good news. The 2020 goal is that this region would reduce greenhouse gas levels to 20% below 2005 levels. So we would go from about 75 million metric tons to about 60 million metric tons. And then by 2050, we would be 80% below 2005 levels, meaning we will be at about 15 million metric tons. Those are the goals. I'll hand it over to Bob to walk you through the strategies and what potential they have indicated.
Okay. As Conti described, the businesses as usual case looks at the growth that the region would experience with additional jobs and households over that period from 2005. And it was projected to increase by about 50% over that time period. So that we're starting at the 2005 levels without doing anything, we would have expected about a 50% increase over 2005 levels by 2050.
Next question about that. Does that obviously that recognizes there will be population and job growth.
Absolutely.
Does it assume that technology remains static?
No. Well, for the business as usual, the technology that was in effect.
We're assuming the CAFE standards never change, and that Volkswagen continues to tinker with their software, and everything is good.
Exactly. You're still in my thunder a little bit.
I'm sorry.
So if we go to the next group of, you know, the policies that had changed, and there were things in the energy and built environment, more efficient power generation that has closing some of the power plants that are coal-fired to switching them to natural gas. In the transportation and land use sectors, it was the fuel economy, going to the higher fuel economy standards, the CAFE, that have brought our projection of what the greenhouse gas from the transportation sector would be in 2050 down substantially. Also, some of our land use policies as local governments and their comprehensive plans are looking at focusing more of the region's growth in activity centers that are mixed use, walkable, and transit oriented. That has had some impact. But you can see that we're still above the level that we were in 2005. So then looking at some of the strategies that we analyzed in the energy and built environment, what Conti pointed out was the viable and the stretch, and what this graph is showing going the full extent, the stretch strategies that we could reduce the emissions from the energy sector by approximately 32 million metric tons. And a lot of the reason for that the improvements in energy efficiency and power generation affect the entire population, the existing buildings as well as the ones that are being constructed. So those strategies tend to be very effective. The next one is the land use strategies, which is almost 3 million metric tons. Now, one of the reasons that wedge of the chart is so small is that we already are projecting a lot of our growth to occur in these activity centers that are well served by transit and provide opportunities for walk and bike. And we're only looking at the increment of growth over the the period. It's something that doesn't affect 80% of the base of our existing land use that will continue to be in place well into the future. Going to the transportation sector, and here we're looking at improvements in fuel economy, some technology improvements, also expanded travel demand management, looking at some pricing strategies in transportation. So if you that leaves us still short of the overall goal that COG set both for 2020 and for 2050. So that last piece, we're looking at what else could be done at all levels of government, federal, state, and local. To briefly summarize, if you break the problem into thirds, with our current policies in energy and built environment transportation, that deals with about a third of the problem. With the strategies that we had examined in the multi-sector working group effort, that could get us another third, but there would still a remaining third that would have to be addressed to fully meet COG's greenhouse gas goal for 2050. The current policies, I think I've talked about those all already. It's quite a list of things that we are currently doing. Potential strategies, again, as Conti explained, we looked at a number of individual strategies. I think there were like 36 that got grouped into major sectors, the energy and built environment, land use and transportation. And we chose a Venn diagram to make this point in that the strategies interact. In our land use strategies, some of the goal of that is to reduce vehicle miles of travel, which again would reduce emissions from the transportation sector. But again, by concentrating development in smaller land area activity centers, it also means that you're affecting the built environment in terms of the size of housing units and commercial space, the number of employees per square foot. So the land use benefits both the land use and transportation. In the transportation sector, as we look at improvements in vehicle technology, electrical vehicles, fuel cell, but particularly electrical vehicles, that reduces the tailpipe emissions of CO2, but you have to generate electricity to power them. So there's a little bit of an offset in the energy sector, even though there's a reduction in the transportation. The larger number of strategies were grouped into 21 combinations that we looked at the viable and stretch levels. In addition, it was recognized to get any of these strategies, none of these strategies are adopted. They're potential. They're the things that could be done if we really, really tried hard. But there have been no actions to implement any of those. So it was recognized in all of the sectors there would need to be a public education and community engagement strategy to support that implementation of these potential strategies. Looking at the energy and built environment, particularly improving the energy efficiency in existing and new buildings, that gave us the largest single progress towards the goal, which would get about 15 to 18% towards the goal. And here you would be looking at reductions in energy and water use in existing buildings, and then our new buildings. What was considered viable is that 50% of the new buildings would be net zero, meaning they produced enough energy to support their operations, and the stretch strategy would be 100% of all our new buildings would be net zero energy. The significant co-benefits and costs are also identified on the slide. The other big impact that we saw in the energy sector had to do with power sector and renewables. Meeting the clean power plan will get us a long way there. There are opportunities for renewable portfolios, including new solar standards. And again, if we really wanted to stretch this particular strategy in terms of reducing the CO2 emissions from the power sector, we can look at additional nuclear power plants for the region in southern Maryland and in Virginia, and also look at the potential for offshore wind power as well. In terms of our land use strategies, you know, this would go beyond what we currently have in our comprehensive plans and in the COG cooperative forecast. That right now, about 60% of our housing growth and 75% of our employment growth is projected to go in activity centers. The viable strategy would take within each jurisdiction, any growth that was outside of these activity centers would be concentrated in each jurisdiction's activity center, particularly those that had premium transit. By premium transit, we're talking metro rail, commuter rail, light rail, streetcar, and bus rapid transit. So the viable considers taking future growth outside of the centers and concentrating in them. The stretch strategy goes beyond that. It would look at the region as a whole, and we have some imbalances between at the jurisdictional level between the number of jobs and housing in different jurisdictions. So in the stretch strategy, it would look at within the region reallocating growth to get a better job housing balance everywhere, and then shifting the growth into the activity centers. So again, this would be something that would go beyond what we currently have, and the range would get us about 2% towards the 2050 goal if we were to pursue that strategy aggressively. The other benefit of concentrating more of our growth in activity centers is that it reduces the loss of natural cover and keeps our tree canopy through carbon sequestration. Again, that reduces absorbs the greenhouse gas emissions. So there would be a potential of about 1%. If we were to concentrate development and then expand our region's tree canopy by about 5%. Transportation strategy, there is a potential of 2 to 4%, looking at so-called zero emission vehicles in our light duty and public sector of fleets is considered viable. A stretch, we would want to increase that to 25% for the light duty fleet, and also reduce the carbon content of fuel. Now, to the extent that these are electric vehicles, there is some offset on the power sector because more electric power would have to be generated for that. Although if you have a cleaner power sector, again, it improves the reduction potential from these strategies. Travel demand management, for transit, and looking at pricing strategies. The viable strategy look at expanding the employer subsidies to their employees to support transit and carpooling, putting parking charges in 90% of the activity centers, $5 cordon price charge for entering downtown D.C., and again, in D.C.'s long-range transportation plan, that is actually one strategy that they have in that plan, and then also look at reducing transit fares by 25%. The stretch strategy goes farther in each of those categories in terms of the amount, And then the other thing that it would add is a 10 cent per mile vehicle miles of travel charge. So every mile you traveled your vehicle, there would be a 10 cent a mile charge for that, which would be used to support, in theory, some of the subsidies for the transit and other programs. In terms of additional measures, getting the last of the third way there, again, it's been suggested we could look at even more aggressive local strategies, providing more support for increased energy efficiency and renewables, increasing the use of transit. There's technology improvement, and then there's a whole host of things that we would be pressing our federal government to implement in terms of setting standards, dealing with pipelines, commercial aviation, and so forth. So those would be some of the things that we're going to look at in the next couple months to see what they could potentially contribute, and would they get us all the way to our 2050 goal. So with that, I'll let Conti conclude.
So the multi-sector working group's analysis today has said, all the actions that we are taking, land use, transportation, energy, built environment, will get us to one-third of our goal. Here are a set of really stretched strategies that we have identified we could take, all of which are at a policy level. But working with your senior staffs, we were challenged to think beyond the box, outside of the box, and say, what is it that we could do? And if we did that, it will get us another third. And then there's still another third that we will still need to go. But the critical thing is the middle third that we believe is potential. That is all it is. It is potential. We need a discussion on what sort of actions would be needed to realize that potential. So the next steps is really, as we present the interim findings to the policy boards, we were asked, you will recall the third bullet in the charge that was given to the multi-sector working group. The senior technical group was supposed to engage in an exploration of setting targets within each sector based on the analysis that we have done, which means going back and looking at the strategies that Bob just outlined. Which of these could be implemented? What sort of actions are needed? Is there a commitment by all of the jurisdictions in this region towards implementing those actions so we could realize these? That would be the exploration work that the multi-sector working group would be doing between September and December. And the plan is to come back to the individual policy boards with what the working group has identified as viable or what actions might be needed. Earlier last week, one of our board members asked at the Transportation Planning Board to bring a resolution to the Transportation Planning Board in December. And the intent of the resolution is to engage the TPP into discussing what actions we would take and what targets we would establish and adopt if we so choose to do for developing our projects that go into the CLRP based on greenhouse gas reduction targets. So that's something that's coming in the next few months. We have tried our best to follow what a TPP, we call the Scartian group, and not go over every slide or everything on each slide to allow some time for questions. And Bob and I will be happy to answer to the best of our ability.
Questions for Tom?
Just a clarification, really, on slide 14. I just noticed that the $5 cordon charge or cordon pricing in downtown D.C. is supposed to be sort of a viable and a stretch strategy. Is it one or the other, or does it go on top?
It's on top. The idea was the stretch with everything in the viable plus.
It's just list the same thing is listed both places.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
I think recommendations need to be realistic.
What a concept.
And And that particular recommendation, just frankly, you know, I think is not going to be something that
we visited this issue
that would, like, we visited this. You know, most of our jurisdictions have taken positions, legislative positions, in opposition to a commuter tax. People entering the district, and it's been a pretty strong hot button issue. So I guess I would, to that particular one, there may be others, but I think we really need to make sure we're looking at these recommendations for, are they truly realistic? Is there some history that would, you know, that would demonstrate that some things are just not going to happen, so that we don't have things out there as though they continue to be a recommendation if it's just not going to happen. And people get exercised and upset about something that, you know, maybe is not realistic.
I think your points are very well made. The next steps we as staff are planning to do, starting with the TPP's technical committee and the individual sector-specific working groups within the multi-sector working group, is laying out in greater detail each of the assumptions that are within each of the strategies that was proposed by the group. During those discussions, January, February, March, we tried to engage the people in recognizing, do you truly believe this is viable? Do you truly believe this could be implemented? So on the $5 carbon fee, the way that was left as a viable strategy was the DC Department of Transportation's adopted comprehensive plan says that is their policy, and
they
believe
they
because
would
they
love
they,
that.
Yeah, they love it. So,
well, they
it's
were,
the rest of us that
there was also some discussion about including parts of Arlington and Alexandria in that court in charge, and that got pushed back.
Yeah, I think, you know, anything that involves a fee to enter into any of our jurisdictions is just not going to be well received.
We broke a lot of grass. Good, Mr. Snyder.
Thanks a lot. Could you take a minute and just go over quickly why do we care about greenhouse gas reductions? You went right on to it, but I think it's very important. Let's get back to basics. Why do we even care about this?
We would go back to the Climate Change Energy Report that was published in 2008. It builds on the UN IPCC's report that came out, which contributes or which has indicated that climate change leads to severe weather occurrences and a greater shift in where they occur, the frequencies of that, which has a direct impact on just not just the infrastructure, but on people, livelihood, production. So that's the larger context for caring about greenhouse gases, at least in my opinion.
Okay, so let me then focus on a couple of these strategies. I had the easiest commute I've had over the last 2 days to downtown D.C. because a lot of people work from home. I mean, frankly, the difference in the commute was obvious. You could almost reach out and touch it. It was so clear. So my question is, let's focus on the transportation sector for a minute. Vehicle miles, travel reduction. What sort of mode share would we need? What sort of combination? I don't need coordinate costs, anything like that. But, I mean, in terms of additional transit, in terms of offering people options they don't have, in terms of teleworking, what I'm really interested in what mode share we're aiming at. What do we have to do as an outcome in the transportation sector to be able to contribute meaningfully to meet these targets?
That's a very good question. Starting with the technical committee next week, we are providing all of that model-generated information. I brought up slide 15 on the screen, the travel demand management. If all of these strategies were done, we have calculated, the model predicts, if you had all of these impacts or these kinds of fees on single occupant auto drivers, this would reduce vehicle miles traveled by shifting them either to transit or to walk and bike or to telework or carpool and vanpool. So we have those numbers. So these And in spite of the severity or the higher level of assumptions here, this is going to contribute about 2% towards our reduction. The specific transit rideshare increases to accommodate this amount of VMT reduction for this strategy is somewhere in the range of 25% to 30%. So that would be a cost. Apart from the policy actions needed to implement these things, we would have to have a commitment to providing the cost for transit, whether it's metro rail, local buses, commuter rail. There has to be that sort of funding available to provide the additional capacity to accommodate 30% more transit ridership. Similarly, if these trips are moving towards carpool and vanpool, there would be need for park and ride lots. The significant thing that we have found, there's literature and technical analysis that show that to reduce greenhouse gases, the strategies that are most useful are decarbonizing the fuel or reducing vehicle miles of travel. So vehicle miles of travel you reduce by trying to shift them to other modes, hopefully not by losing jobs or population. So if you're trying to shift them, you have either transit, carpool, vanpool, or walk and bike. And the transit, the activity center and transit-oriented development strategy that this region is currently pursuing and implementing is focused on trying to reduce VMT. To shift even more, these are the kinds of strategies that the model brings.
There is an interaction which makes it harder that as you get more fuel-efficient vehicles with the higher standards, then you need increasingly large VMT reductions to get significant reductions in the greenhouse gases.
I echo what Ms. Volva said, and Mr. Snyder touched on a point that I wanted. Correct me if I'm wrong, when you mentioned viable versus stretch, did you mean to imply that viable was within reach now?
Is that the assumption.
That is the assumption, because when I look at the viable at 50% net zero energy in new buildings, I mean, that's ka-ching. I'm not sure that's within reach. These are very expensive, and I'm assuming you have no overall price estimate, no cost estimate of what all of this is going to cost.
We've attempted to estimate a cost, and honestly, the analysis is at a sketch planning level, and therefore it has been a very challenging task to come up with a good quantitative cost estimate. The best that we have been able to come up with so far is a low, medium, high sort of estimate, particularly on the energy and built environment sector. But that is a task that we are still pursuing to see can we get a better resolution on cost.
I just wondered how were these goals set? What was the intent when they were set?
The goals, I do recall participating in those meetings back in 2008. The primary driver for that throughout the country was the IPCC report from the UN, the Interpanel Climate Control reports that came out. There are a number of organizations within the country, such as the Clean Cities Council, have adopted similar goals, all derived from the IPCC. Again, all of these are goals that are conceivably attainable with technology. And for example, with the transportation sector, the EPA about 18 months ago passed what is known as the Tier 3 controls, and the Department of Energy and EPA collectively passed what is called the new CAFE standards, the fuel efficiency standards. According to that standards, the fleet of vehicles by auto manufacturers, not any specific model, but average of all the models a manufacturer puts out, it is supposed to be for light-duty vehicles 54.5 miles per gallon. That strategy, we were able to, for the first time this year, analyze what would be the greenhouse gas reduction impact of just that strategy. When we looked at the CLRP last year, and when we looked at the CO2 emissions in 2040, it was showing increasing above 2005 level. Just that one strategy today shows that from the transportation sector, from the projects and the land use that's in the CLRP, CO2 emissions will be 17% below 2005 level. So there are few related strategies which would have to be systemic at a higher level that reaches more people and not on a voluntary basis. But these are difficult, these are aspirational goals, certainly worth striving for, but it would require equally, at an equal level of effort and technology controls.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'll try to be very good. Only a couple comments. Maybe when UN First decides to get China cleaned up, then we ought to stop squeezing blood out of the turnip here in the U.S. When I read this, I keep only thinking the only thing we're going to do to really benefit is perhaps just stop growing in a region. Or maybe the folks inside the Beltway can stop using cars walk to work. Some of this may be doable where people are able to work or next to where they live. But this is not a plan, it is a reality when you get outside of the Beltway right now. And we've got people that are traveling here from Pennsylvania to work in a region. And so we got to use some common sense. The other thing, Mr. Chairman, just a comment, because there was a suggestion in here more a tree canopy. And this is for VDOT. And perhaps my state delegates and senators here. We have a situation where we have a project in Loudoun County on Loudoun County Parkway. The developer that started about 20 years ago has been building part of Loudoun County Parkway with the median where he put trees with the intention of moving the trees over to somewhere else in the project, but that hasn't happened after 20 years. So we got a beautiful tree canopy. This developer has finally finished the road and trying to get it and accept it into VDOT. VDOT won't accept it because there's beautiful trees in the median. And their tractors are 15 foot tall, 11 foot wide are the mowers. This developer has offered to buy them mowers that they can use to cut under the tree canopy, but VDOT refuses at this point to accept them because they use various contractors to cut the grass in the median twice a year, that is. So I think perhaps VDOT needs to change their standard a little bit and allow for more tree canopies in the median, but anyway, just an interesting point because they do add to the community quite a bit, and as we see, they help with greenhouse gases.
That's it,
Ms. Bichette. I just want to affirm that the policy driving these strategies has nothing to do with any federal attainment for, any federal regulation for attainment. Is that correct?
That is correct. Currently, there are no federal standards for greenhouse gases.
My question was, asked by Ms. Shiga. I know that we've got volatile organic compounds, nitrous oxide, ozone, with our non-attainment budget. And that was my question. Greenhouse gases, did that even fit into the regulatory EPA matrix right now? Or if this is all aspirational voluntary?
Currently, it does not fit into any of the EPA regulatory mechanisms in place. EPA has contested that the Clean Air Act gives it the authority to regulate greenhouse gases. I think that issue went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court has affirmed that the Clean Air Act does allow EPA to look at greenhouse gases. But beyond that, there has been no official proclamations or developments as of yet.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, I was looking at page 15 where it talks about the goal for 2050. It says that even the way this is, it's 27 to 39% away. Is the final report going to try and get closer, or are we just going to just get this close?
That's a good question. That we hope that the policy people would give us some guidance on. We certainly are expecting the multi-sector working group to have some opinions on it. There is a school of thought that we need to really look at the kinds of questions we are hearing from you all, that we should be looking at the middle one-third to realize, are these even attainable? Let's first figure that out and then worry about where the remaining, rather than come up with analysis of strategies to attain the remaining one-third. But there are others who believe that now we need a set of strategies analyzed even for the other one-third, and then we can talk about which ones, who needs to pursue and what. So at this time, the technical analysis has stopped right here. We haven't undertaken any significant work to analyze strategies for the remaining one-third.
Yeah. And Mr. Chairman, the other two things I was going to ask about were energy efficiency to older buildings, which is, I thought, a pretty huge opportunity for reduction. And it says on here improvements to solar, but I have the impression with the price of solar coming down so much that it's efficient, and so many buildings having large roofs and that sort of thing, that is a big opportunity. Did the report contemplate that fully?
Yes, the report does anticipate energy efficiency sorts of improvements for existing buildings as well.
Thank you.
Steve Walsh is on our team. You want to talk about the solar, Steve?
Two things. The existing building energy efficiency, we're assuming across the board, oh, between now and 2050, 30% increase in the efficiency in the existing building. On the solar side, I'll step up. On the solar side, we were looking at having policies in place that would increase the amount of distributed solar on individual buildings' roofs, and then the types of policies that would increase the level that are included in the state renewable portfolio standards that are more controlled by the utilities, doubling it in Maryland, adding another 10% in Virginia to the solar and 10% in the district were the assumptions.
Thank you.
Because I'm getting a little sensitive on time, because Mrs. Gross is going to stick her head in the door in a couple minutes. Any other questions for Team PB? Last one.
I'm looking at, let's see, here it's page 11, key land use strategies, and there's viable, which calls for, this is the one. Concentrating growth in activity centers and along transit stretch, however, is regional job housing imbalances are addressed by shifting future growth across jurisdictional boundaries and then concentrating as described above. So anyway, I'm not sure what the mechanism would be for shifting growth among jurisdictions, and so anyway, I'd be curious to see if someone had ideas for how that might be done within.
I've got some.
I guess.
Come
on. I don't want to make my
election price on this year's vote.
But actually, in a perfect world, looking at a map and thinking, well, it would be better to have this over here, in another county rather than here. But this is not a perfect world, and so everyone, is responsible for their own jurisdiction. And I just wanted to raise that as one of the looks like that might be hard, if not consistent, maybe with.
We tried. Maybe we were too subtle in calling it stretch, but.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
State reexamines. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, and I just wanted to add, the reason why I asked Mr. Shreekhan to present to you this evening, of course, the authority's projects, the 70% projects funded with the 70% regional revenue are regional projects. They are sent to the TPB for air quality conformity determination, but also a lot of those projects are cost-sharing projects, so they have federal, state, and local monies on. So I wanted to make sure that this authority was aware of what's going on with strategies and initiatives regarding greenhouse gas and how it will affect the projects that, or how it could affect the projects that are included in the constrained long-range.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Next up is the website update.
So, Mr. Chairman, this is one we are happy to present regarding the update of the authority's website. For the past few months, we've been taking pictures of individual members. You have individual pictures and a group shot, but all of this was in the attempt to update the authority's website to make it more user-friendly, to make it more accessible in finding information. Sometimes MBTA staff, we have a difficult time finding information on our website, and I would like Kamala to present this because this was her project. She took it on. She told us what to do, and we hope you are proud of the product.
Mr. Chairman, members of the authority, your authority staff has been working hard to develop your new website. We've reviewed and updated all the pages on the existing site, as well as creating new sections and pages for the new site that speak to transparency and ease of access for the public. The new site is also ADA compliant and mobile responsive, meaning that the site knows what device the user is using to view the site and will respond accordingly. On the homepage, you can see some new features like the photo slider bar, which we intend to update on a regular basis. We have a new news event calendar that has a mouse over meeting features, and it's clickable to see more details about that meeting. We have accessibility features up here like text resizing, language translation, a Google site search bar. And down here we've added a popular links section with, most importantly, the document archive section that will have all the authority archives there and an easy access. Under our About section, we've added the Members page with all the photos that you have all so graciously let us take over the last few months.
Uh-oh. Look at Marty. Oh, my God.
Couldn't Photoshop out.
I'm going to give Sharon's Brian. We actually took some new pictures.
Each of these photos is also clickable to the links that you've provided for your websites.
Sharon looks the best, I've decided.
We've also added a regional partners page with all the logos for our partners, which also have clickable links to their websites.
Wow.
Under the finance section, which is entirely new, we've tried to speak to transparency by putting up all of the revenue reports over the last few years, budget reports, and that will continue to be updated, of course. And under, as I said, the document archive section, everything is first categorized by type of document. And then when you click into it, you'll be able to see all of the existing documents. And for those of you who may not know, we added the audio files starting in March. There's an intent to go back and add the old files that we have as we have time to do them. So that's your new site. It's still slightly in production, but it's almost finished. We intend to launch on or about the 1st of October.
The authority document, so therefore, if we know of a meeting where a document was in our packet, we can go to the site.
Correct.
And, okay, great, thank you.
Those do exist on the existing site, too. They're just a little harder.
They're just hard to find. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Great job.
No, yes, sir.
Just came into the room.
So Mrs. Bulova just said,
Rob,
all of this information, and Rob Whitfield's not here to see it, and then he walks in the room.
It's one thing to have information, it's another thing to have the time to analyze
it. Any other questions on this? Any comments? This is fantastic.
Yeah, thank you.
This is really great. I'll say, I think, I mean, while it did get updated, the website that we're phasing out, I think, was created after the immediately after the passage of HB 3202, and just stayed the same, just kept adding minutes added to it each month. This is a huge leap forward.
It was just the other day.
And so it's great. Fantastic. Thank you. Moving on, we have some discussion items. We'll go Mr. Silverthorne from the Bylaws Committee that we need to tell us about.
No, we're gonna hold off. That's me. We've met twice.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, excellent. Anything from TAC or,
yeah.
Or PCAC?
The information, the memo is in the packet of the Sheriff's Office.
Finance Committee, Mr. York?
We will not have Finance Committee in October and probably not in November. Given our the main body schedule. So.
Okay, excellent. Is Batman anything else for us tonight?
I just wanted to note, of course, that the authority has kicked off the update of the transaction plan. We are close to finalizing a name, so at your next meeting, we will have the name of the updated plan and a project schedule for the authority members. Also, we are going to hold a workshop regarding the standard project agreements to make sure everyone is on the same page regarding what MBTA staff is looking for regarding the evaluation of the agreements. And I do want to note that this past Monday, we held our first ribbon cutting for the buses that the authority has purchased for the Arlington ART, Fairfax Connector, the City of Fairfax Q, and the PRTC Omni-Ride buses. And that, I guess we had some coverage, if you will, in the Mass Transit magazine, which is an online periodical. So,
thank you. 4 and 9 as well.
Yes.
Please, Mr.
Senator.
I'm sorry. I just want to thank publicly Monica and Kamala. You guys did a great job with that. I know I have not attended your other big events. So this is my first one. Obviously, it was held in the city, so I should have been there. But I want to just thank you all. You all did a great job. And I know it's a lot of work and a lot of headache going into all these things, but it was flawless, even with a few sprinkles we managed, and it was a nice event. So thank you all for all you
did. And I'll say, man, you can't tell from the picture that just scrolled up, but it was actually very cool because we had an ART bus, a connector bus, a Q bus, and an Omni-Ride bus.
All
park nose to nose, which has probably never happened before, and actually is outside the context of pictures is meaningless, but because it means that they weren't, you know, driving passengers. But it was a kind of a neat thing to. It really demonstrates the regionalism of what we're doing, because you had four jurisdictions cutting ribbons on new equipment, same day, same place. It was a pretty awesome thing.
Very well.
I also thought it was really striking seeing the buses all, you know, all next to each other. The different roles that the different transit vehicles play. For instance, PRTC was a really big Greyhound type bus, and it serves a purpose of long distance trips for Prince William riders. And then it had the ART bus in Arlington, which was small, nimble, for getting around in an urban area, and the others, you know, somewhere in between. But it was just a neat, really neat display, and a beautifully orchestrated event. It was really special.
There was a meeting I went to for the first time for the PAWG before. Mr. Silverthorne and I were in front of the Bylaws Committee. And a question came up that was an interesting one. If this authority funds a bus, at some point in the future, that bus will amortize. It's not going to be fixable. It's a capital. It's zero balanced out, fully amortized. What happens at that time? Does the locality have the obligation to buy a new bus or come back to this authority for replacement? I just wonder how in our matrix, if we're calling it the project now, it's kind of relevant. How does that work out where you've got a piece of investment that's not really capital infrastructure, it's property that ultimately will be fully amortized?
And Todd, conferring with Ms. Posner, the way the SPA is structured, that you have to use the capital purchase for its useful life, if you will. So once the useful life of that bus is over, if a locality or agency wanted a new bus, if you will, they would have to go back through the process, the project evaluation and selection process, assuming that they don't inherently have their own vehicles to replace the bus. I know a lot of the agencies, they have a rotation, if you will, so they have already accounted for situations where they have to pull buses in and out of service.
I'll say that I see Mr. Pashani here. I don't know if Mr. Marks is here, but we have some of our transit agencies. I mean, I believe that that all of our transit agencies build into their long-range capital plan the fact that they have to, once you have a bus, you have to pay a driver, pay for gas. That's the easy part. You also have to pay for maintenance, and you have to set aside funds over time. There's a, whatever the inverse of amortization is the, you know, is you have to build into your capital plan the assumption that in 12 years or whatever, there's a back end. Mr. Shani, do you want to turn
in? In Fairfax, we are adding the MBTA purchase of buses to our replacement. So the board sets aside a certain amount of money every year so that when those buses reach the end of their useful life, that there is money that to replace them in 15 years.
Because, I mean, a bus that the authority pays for to expand capacity, upon its retirement, the replacement bus does not expand capacity.
Right. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the Fairfax model may be a good one. I'm not sure we can make that mandatory at this juncture, but the idea that at the end of the bus is useful life, the jurisdiction is going to say, well, we're going to be one bus short, capacity is going to be reduced for what, because we don't have to bring back the bus, but treat it like a reserve fund. And ultimately, you've got to put a new roof in the shopping center. You put some money every year toward it, then so you never run out of cash to keep that thing dry.
Capital renewal, vehicle replacement, all of this.
Precisely. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, if you will, on the screen and behind Chairman York is a map showing the new and expanded bus services that are provided in the region because of the new buses that the authority has purchased. And also, I'd be remiss if I didn't say you have in the little red and white boxes in front of you are the pedometers, the PRTC pedometers, if you will, that were handed out at the ribbon cut.
And I'll say, as a PRTC board member, no, there is not a transit agency in the region that has better swag than PRTC. I got shelves full of really cool. Excellent. Any other business to come before the authority this evening? Mr. Sullivan?
I know this is a little corny, but I just want to wish everybody that we're not meeting next month. I wish everybody, including you, Sharon, I'm going to miss somebody. I'm going to get in trouble here.
Yeah.
Randy, Adam. And, of course, you probably have the two toughest races, I'm guessing. I want to wish you all the very best in re-election. It's nice being an independent, meaning I run as an independent, so I can make Democrats and Republicans mad on a regular basis. But I consider all you guys terrific leaders, and I wish you the best in re-election. Thank you.
Thank you.
And with that, thank you all very much. We'll see you in November. Thank you. You're a jerk.